Welcome, Penelope Smith. This is Dr. Lori Moore, and I am very happy to have you here today, partly just because I have such warm feelings towards you as a friend, and very much because I see you to be the grandmother of animal communication. I know that my students would not be learning much of what they're learning if it wasn't for Gina Palmer, my teacher, who was your student, and I believe there's hundreds of those lines that started with you all over the globe now. So I've been very excited about your Species Link magazine, which is a great forum for many animals and many animal communicators to share their perceptions. And I've loved many of your books. I believe the latest one is The Animals and Spirit. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, that's what I thought. And let me give people your website just to start off. It's animaltalk.net. So we are here today. Jesse Boy is sitting right next to me, the cat. And your beloved cat friend Sherman is with us. And we're going to be talking somewhat informally in a just conversational nature about the situation of the globe, which in my experience is pretty powerful right now. There seems to be this really sweet, light, beautiful flux of waves allowing people to really come into a much deeper awakening of the joy, the peace, the love, the harmonies. And simultaneously, there seems to be a lot of really growing currents of challenge. Is greed going to overtake the potential to give food and shelter for all? And is selfishness going to overtake the possibility of offering education to more and more people so that awakening and understanding can be more known? And what I'm seeing is that you, like a number of other people, are really creating a vortex of beautiful energy through yourself, through your animal self, through your person self, that's allowing many people to be more in touch and birthed into a bigger awareness of ourselves as one globe of many species who can work in community for goodness. So I just wanted to ask you what you feel inspired to share about that, because you've been so committed to your work for so long and it's so clear to you. How do you articulate exactly what it is that you're doing on the globe?
I'm an awakener. At this time in my existence, it has taken, it takes a certain form. It keeps morphing, changing with the times. But I've always been aware of who I am and what I'm doing here. I consciously reincarnated and have been conscious of choosing my situation and doing my work in this life. I've never not had that consciousness, and so I was aware that I was here on a mission from when I was, born, when I was a little kid, and so it's kind of taken different forms, but it's always about enlightenment. It's always about sharing with people, reminding people of who they really are, because of the animals, the plants, the earth, the elements, they never forget who they are. We're surrounded by the aspects of ourselves, which is all of creation, that doesn't forget. And humans have been given the opportunity to forget and therefore remember, which is both their bane and their their game or opportunity, which is to remember and bring that into a greater fruition, because in the forgetting and the loss, there's a contrast to then remembering and coming into a greater flowering of remembering. So at this time, I'm sort of, I'm 63 and a half. And at this time in my life, I feel very much in contemplation. I mean, I still obviously do my work and teach and edit and write Species Link and books. But I feel very much a watcher, an observer of what's going on and an enjoyer of the richness of creation. So I feel holding the space, sort of the hub for realization of beings to come to a greater place of who they are in this world. Because many people succumb to worries. They forget who they are in their center and that all is well and they are well and they're creators. And so people succumb to worries and thinking and fear, and it's wonderful to have beings, all our animal friends, of course, and plants and the earth and many people at this time who are awakening and holding the space of who we really are as eternal beings in love with each other, in the greater love, in the love that we are. So I sit here in my log cabin and in my lovely forest, and feel the world pulsing and sort of hold the space for other beings and human beings and students to come to a further space of their own creativity. I really love people's creativity. I feel that that's what we're here for, is to share our creations and spark each other with fun and delight in sharing, and to help people to come to the greatest fullness of creativity without all the fear holding them back. So I don't feel I really have to do much anymore. You know, I feel like I've sort of accomplished what I came here to do, what my assignment was this lifetime. And now I'm just enjoying the flow and the great tsunamis of creation and destruction all the same. Great flow of metamorphosis, of evolution of all beings, and doing my part to stay in the highest space possible. With all the changes that are very frightening to many people, and to hold the space that they know and they will remember as they're given to do, you know, as they're as they want to do, as they've made their life plan to do, to move forward, and to so that we can all embrace each other. Because I just see that our evolution is about embracing, further embracing of each other. In the love, and what is the love? It's just who we are. It's the thing that, it's the only thing that's left after everything is taken away. So if you've had a jolt in your life, like I had a fire in 1995 that took away my home, and it was a catalyst for destroying my marriage, which was of course part of the evolution, and a loss of land and family, animal family, and a lot of loss. Well, what was left? What is always left after things are taken away? Kindness, sharing, love, and growing in that love. And we're human, so you know we have this human incarnation. So we get the whole package with it. We get the whole deal. We get the whole programming. All the dark and the light, the fear and the gloriousness. We get it all. And as we acknowledge and love every piece of it, we see that we're part of the whole. I know in my daily relations with my neighbors and people around, I just feel more and more loving and compassionate. And it isn't because, you know, I have a magic formula or I try really hard. I just am dedicated to the divine in all beings, God in all beings, God as all beings. And so that purpose, that intention just kind of rolls into my life and gives me the next a thing that helps me to evolve, to embrace and the darkness within myself and therefore within all beings. And it's amazing, Lori. I mean, I look at who I am now, and I never knew I would be in this state. I never knew it was possible in the physical with a human incarnation, with all its contradictions and, you know, dark and light. I never knew it was possible to feel so relaxed and loving, because I took on a task of going through tremendous abuse as a child and turning all that into love for women, children, men, all beings. And so a lot of my responses ingrained in my body have been real fearful of people, even though I've gone forward with people and smiled and laughed with them and taught them. There's been a tremendous amount of fear. I never thought that I would get to this place where I just look at them and I just understand. I just feel compassion. I rarely ever feel any fear about people anymore. You know, even if they were to pick up a knife and stab me, my body might feel fear, but I would just look at them and go, oh, you're hurting that bad. You know.
I feel so happy hearing you share about this and just feeling this great spaciousness, this connectedness to all beings as yourself. Not like you, Penelope, are here and then there's a string connected to that being there. It's more like your heart's opened into this such a big spaciousness that you're not having an interest in denying any of yourself. You're knowing all yourself is all and
yeah.
And this love and compassion, and it feels like this great joy in you too. This great joy just can naturally come forth, and it's so cleansing of what you said, the human the fears, that the dark parts, the fears that we have in our,
well, all the pain we've collected
pain
through
we've
the
collected.
Ages.
Yeah.
The resistance, the pain, the games, you know,
yeah.
We created that ended up trapping us, that we ended up thinking were really real,
yeah.
And became our cages.
And we had that, like you said at the beginning of what you were speaking, we had that opportunity, whereas it's always so, I'm thinking of the right word, just I have this awe about how animal states, I know so many animals who are in such wonderful states of compassion, sharing, love, many in states of oneness like you talk about. But there's some choice that sometimes seems to burden humans that I'm not thinking the animals have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I've discovered and how I see it is that we came into a game, the human game, of tremendous creative possibilities. And somewhere along the line, we got enmired. We forgot who we really were. And the games became the thing, and we ended up in a trap.
Mm.
And the animals, going as a spirit, if we take on an animal form, we don't have this kind of trap, this mental separation. Humans have a mind that separates itself from the rest of creation. The animals don't have that. They don't actually, now they can choose, particularly those animals who have had human incarnations go into cat, dog, whoever incarnations, particularly when they're trying to help people. Sometimes they will stay in a state of separation or neuroses or whatever to mirror, to help their human, to be like their human. But generally, the animals just be who they are. They're sort of, they stay in that pureness of, it's all good.
Yes.
You know, if I'm a cat and I kill a fly and eat it, it's fine. I don't think about it. I don't go, oh, dear, maybe I should be a vegetarian. You know, maybe it's not good to eat a fly. Maybe vegetables are more holy. You know, they just eat it. Or if they want to eat a vegetable, they pull it out. You know, and somehow it kind of stays in the balance with them. And somewhere along the line, without going too much into story about human creation and human downfall or Adam and Eve or anything else, but just I would say, just to say that we've gone, we have a choice to go into an illusion and believe that it's real, the illusion of...
Yes, at any moment, we can jump back into... The way I feel it is there's this big space, and it comes through the heart, and it includes all the sounds, all the music running through everything, all the colors, all the situations, all the beings. And then at any given moment, if I forget, I can kind of jump into the scenery and off I go and think that...
and think it's real and judge it and blame and...
measure it, get involved
in it. Do all these things that make us very nervous, very anxious and disconnected. And then we can go into this place where all is well, where even we can contemplate... the Gulf oil spill or murders of war, and go, okay, these are all choices. These are all things that beings are doing.
Yes, they're happening. They're things that are happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're doing, and we can choose what we want to do. We have a choice, and we can choose what we want to create and what we want to flow with. We can have compassion for everything and not get all caught up in it. I get a lot of calls and emails whenever there's anything happening with animals. anywhere, the dolphins here, I get people say, could you tell them to do this? Could you tell them to stay away? Could you do this, Penelope? Could you do that? Can you change this? I said, do you think they don't know what they're doing?
Mm.
They're beings who choose, and they also have physical bodies that need to be in certain places at certain times. And if we're affected by a creation, we need to change. We can only change from here, from inside ourselves.
And that's so powerful what you just said, because I'm noticing right as you say it how when I'm responding through whatever I'm seeing, whatever telescope I'm using, whatever I'm hearing, as soon as I'm responding, there's a creation. There's there's waves like going right from me into the universe, adding to the creation. And so if I'm busy thinking I'm separate and I need to control what I perceive somebody else is doing in the creation, it's almost like I feel these angles are coming out of me instead of these waves.
It's like a big war. And I try to communicate that to people. I say, this is actually war. It's the war in ourselves, but we're projecting it. We got to stop this. We got to fight this. Well, all beings are a flow. We're all a flow. We're all part of the flow. We have choice in the flow. And really, creation is just creation.
It's just going to have a birth and a death, as every aspect of it will, except that deepest part of it that's really not tangible or in a separate form in any way, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Maybe even that has a birth and a death. I don't know.
But, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter to even resolve it.
Yeah.
It's just if we can be loving toward whatever it is, that flow goes into it all, into the great mix. I describe it as we're living in this ocean. All of us are in the ocean. There's all kinds of things in the ocean.
Mm.
If we just flow in the open flow, as you say, from the heart with the openness, in the open flow, what else can happen but that there's space for everything? So if they're not crowded and fighting, fight comes from pushing and crowding, against things, pushing.
Yes.
And if we just have space for things, well, when they open up, they change. Even people in war can suddenly, their hearts can open. They can, bring the in quotes, enemy right into their homes and love them, even if it means their death.
Yes, yes.
And isn't it much better to live that way?
It's so
much more peaceful to live that way.
Yeah, it's so simple, and it's really so innate. I know when people come to the gatherings here, often I hear the comment within a few minutes, wow, there's so much love, and I'm feeling so close to these people are so familiar to me. And it's interesting to me how people will interpret that in different ways, because to some people, oh, these must be my people. But all people are your people. And, you know, these must be people who are doing the right thing. But and then other people will just know that this is home. This is available everywhere. This is available in your neighborhood. Wherever you walk, wherever you are.
Yeah,
and that cuts through so many dilemmas that get created in the name of politics or religion or personal
problems. Or rights. I just go, you know, if you can drop back into this bigger space, this open space of who we are, everything resolves. It's just all okay. And that space that the people were talking about being in your retreat, well, that's what it is. You've dropped back into that space. Other people automatically, because people prefer to be in that space, if they can, again, if they're not wound up in their fears, if they can just feel that energy of the open space and they drop back into it, suddenly they feel they're in love with everybody.
Yes. And
there's nothing else left. I go to people, there's really nothing else. I mean, if you drop into that space, all action that flows from you is in this compassion, kindness. Of course you're going to help people around you. It makes it so easy. I just go, okay, if there's great catastrophe, if you know, everybody loses their money and, you know, the stores all crash and this and that, what are we going to do? We're going to share. What else is there to do? So if my neighbors need some food, what am I going to do? Stay here like Gollum and go, oh, precious, precious, this is my food. Well, no. You know, I go, do you need some food?
Yeah, very
simple.
What else
is there to do?
Yeah, very simple. Sherman had been mentioning to me when I was speaking to him earlier that in the love, sometimes where I get caught is, or caught by myself and step into the illusion is, I start to think that there's an awareness that someone else would benefit from having. Well, maybe it's true they would benefit from having it, but they're benefiting from having the awareness they're having. They might not need to have the awareness I can see them perhaps having. And that really, as you say, in the love, the love's the common place. The love can hold it all, and the love can allow for each being to unfold in their own way, to make whatever errors they need to make. By errors, I mean disharmonious states of being that later are realized as non-preferable. In the moment, they're preferable, but later it becomes natural to vibrate in a different way. And it's an interesting topic to me, because what I've seen in holding events with beings from so many different modes of communication, backgrounds, cultural backgrounds, ages, different species, is that different beings are having such different perceptions of what's occurring. And I like that. That's fascinating to me, and that's attractive to me. And when we can start to step into each other's perceptions for a moment, when we can notice, oh, wow, here I am sitting next to Jesse Just Enjoy the Cat, and his vibration is coming through this cat body. And so things are being perceived a little bit different from him than from me, and I step into it with him. It's such a beautiful opening to find, wow, all these different telescopes, all these different glasses from everyone.
Yeah,
and I think that when we keep going back to the love, what needs to blossom or unfold in each one can take place. But what about when beings are in the global environment, some beings that are human, in my experience, are having a awareness or perhaps a developmental awareness that my tribe is more important than your tribe, or my getting enough of what I think I need is more important than there being enough for everyone. And when people are inhabiting powerful roles such as governmental roles and sharing this opinion, it seems to create a passage of how things happen.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. That's the way it is. There's many different people at many different aspects of evolution, let's say, and you know, like some of us are really finished with certain games, and other people are not, and they need to complete that. It's their life journey. They need to have the arena. The Earth is an arena. It's an arena for a lot of different games, a lot of different pastels, a lot of different paintings. And so I don't feel that, I like being aware of all these things. I love reading all the things that are happening, people's different viewpoints. As you say, it's interesting, it's enlightening. And at the same time, I look at it and I go, you know, honor and have compassion that they need to complete that. And if you don't resist it, if you don't add your resistance to it and go, oh, that oil company or, oh, that politician or whatever, if you don't add any of that to it, it's a learning. It's a place they grow through. But it's not our business to direct other people's lives and say, okay, you got to do this now, or you better complete this in one lifetime or whatever. They have their own beautiful plan. And so I just kind of go, well, there's a place for everybody. And if we just go with our own awareness, like you and I seem to have an agreement that going into the open space and being sort of an observer of the game or a great embracer of all things brings us to a real peace and allows everybody to be who they are without us getting all agitated. You know, I mean, it's really about each of us taking care of ourselves. And then what I found is that people around, and even people not even near, they are affected by this openness. It kind of spreads, it's like an invitation.
Yes, yes, it is.
You know, I think of Peace Pilgrim. You know the life of Peace Pilgrim?
Yes, I remember her. Yes.
Oh, I just loved how she said one time she didn't drive anywhere. She walked everywhere.
Yes.
And she accepted people's invitations into their homes and their food. And one time she was in a car. She accepted a ride from a man, and she was resting. And she got very clearly that he was going to come and harm her. And he started coming into the back seat, and he was going to do an act upon her. And she realized that, and she just looked at him with total love. She didn't resist. She didn't judge him. She looked at him with total, complete love and acceptance. And the man burst into tears and admitted what he was going to do and said, you know, he just had a complete turnaround in his life, because it was like this pure light mirror, unresisting, just like water.
Yes, yes.
And the man completely turned around, of course, didn't harm her, and she really couldn't come to harm because she always would be in love. How can anything harm you unless you resist it? You know, unless you go, oh, God, it's harm. Oh, dear, this is bad. And then you're resistant.
Yes, I've seen this kind of situation a number of times. A friend, Elisa Lodge, I remember, was on the back of the bus. I wasn't there. I heard the story from her. And a gang grabbed her, and they were about to rape her. And she was taken over by love and looked at each of them in the eyes with just great compassion for the pain that was bringing them to do this, and feeling the love, and it just stopped. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
And
I feel that that's what we need to do. It's about our own selves. We're given a caretaking mission to take care of our own life.
Mm, mm.
When we come here, you know, we have a greater, you know, we may have a greater mission, a sense of, oh, we're with all beings and we're here for enlightenment, whatever it is, but it's really about ourselves. Okay, so if we just say, okay, I'm going to practice staying in the love, and each day I'll devote time to reminding myself, because, you know, as humans, we forget all the time with our contradictions and our the way our nature is set up. So we remind ourselves, and then suddenly it becomes our nature, our second nature. I mean, we just drop into it. And so then what else could you do? What else could you do but be compassionate in a situation? It doesn't mean that love and compassion won't make you do something else. You might hit somebody over the head out of love and compassion. That might be right thing to do.
Yeah, it's a very in-the-moment kind of response. It's not a rule. When there's a rule of behavior, then we start to feel that resistance again, separation from ourselves.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's very natural when we're in this place of the love. It's the only choice. It's the only response, because that's what we're feeling. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
If it becomes something we're supposed to do or we have to do, or there's nothing wrong with that. That can be a practice in itself, but eventually that will be taken. You spoke earlier in the conversation about everything gets taken. It really does, because we come in and we go out. And I know the times in my life when a lot got taken that was tangible were most powerful love lessons for me. Because like you said, I had to look at, well, what's important here? You didn't say important. You said, what's left?
Yeah.
You know, what's left was what was always there. What's gone wasn't really, what's gone is shapes and flavors of circumstance and situations that were going to be gone anyway, because all that keeps shifting and changing. That's the nature of everything tangible. But the love is so simple. The love is always here, and the love, everyone can, in any frame of being, a little baby, an elderly being, everyone has that.
Yeah.
That's there.
and it comes down to, you know, people could say, I feel helpless in this situation. I said, well, sit with it and let yourself feel, what is it you're here in relationship to that situation? Mm-hmm. What are you to do? Mm-hmm. And many times people will come, well, I'm just here to be and to love. Or I'm here to write my congressman. Or, you know, they're moved to do something. It's all good. It's all in energy. It's all of flow. What are you actually moved to do? What can you be effective about?
And that movement is right there. That's what I find each time I'm sitting quietly, that if there's an impulse to be or to act, whatever it is, it's been nudging me. If pain occurs, in my experience, when I sit, there's just a wave nudging me right below a wave of what I thought was pain. Pain has always, as I've experienced it, turned out to be some kind of resistance, some aspect of the self resisting the self. And then as that's faced, right in there is the inclination of what my being is really wishing to open up into. Right? You know, my mind thinks I'm supposed to be being or doing something, and then when I stop and open up to the experience that's taking place, there is immediate recognition of a whole different way of perceiving what's happening. And then if there's something to do about it, I'll do it. If there's nothing to do, there's nothing to do.
And then
there's so many of us, so we can all take our part in whatever way we've created and has been created through us and of us.
It's right for us to do. You know, we each have this unique part in the whole web, and I'm very glad everybody is doing their parts, because it's their beautiful creation. I go, well, I'm doing this. If I were doing something else, I wouldn't be doing this well. And I happen to really like doing this, and my energy really flows easily into this, so why should I do something else?
Yes.
Just because somebody else thinks that that's the right thing to do. You know, I just always go back into, if you drop back into your center, if you really consult with who you are, then you know. And a lot of people get scared because often they don't come up with anything. They go, oh, dear, I don't know what to do. Or I didn't get anything to do. I said, well, then don't do anything. Don't do anything. If you're not moved,
yeah,
if it doesn't
yeah.
come out of you, don't do it. Sherman's been coming in.
Yes.
And I just want to give what he's giving. Now, for the people who don't know Sherman or have never met him, Sherman recently transitioned from his 22-year-old cat body. He was an orange tabby cat with me for all those 22 years, minus about 6 weeks in the beginning. And he it was extraordinary master who always knew who he was and just was a scamp, was wonderful, was playful, was just an amazing Zen teacher to many, many people through his life. And then just as his body got older and he could move less and less, he just continued to emanate the love and the wisdom so that it was just absolutely astounding to be with him. People would just fall down on their faces in front of him. It was that obvious. And so Sherman is, as he transitioned, I have to laugh because I feel like I have his younger self here. Oliver, who he sent, Ollie, is an orange tabby cat who is, I call, a soul sprout of Sherman. Sherman said in his last 4 years, as his body was getting older, he sent out many soul sprouts because it was necessary to have this orange energy, this yellow, orange, golden energy incarnate on the earth, reaching many, many people. So he sent out a lot of soul sprouts that are really aspects of himself. I mean, like extensions of his energy. But Sherman, I call him the Great Soul Sherman, to try to conceptualize this or, you know, give you a feeling of it, is everywhere. And now that he's in spirit form and not in physical form, even though he has these soul sprout little messengers everywhere, he is holding a space for the greatest evolution of all beings, and he has a particularly great love affinity for this earth and for all beings on this earth, although he's, again, a very galactic, cosmic being. But he says, coming to us, I feel this great tent of light coming over us, this white and light golden light coming over us. And he says, just enjoy.
Mm.
Just enjoy.
Mm.
And I feel this luscious love coming underneath us. And the energy coming through from Sherman is, let yourself open like a flower.
Mm.
This is what evolution is, opening like a flower. Enjoy your life. And if everyone feels the energy of opening like a flower, will be, we're there.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, and there, and everything rolls from that because there's no resistance. See, we have this funny kind of thing where we go into these lines, you know, we go into these lines that go this way and that way, and we have to do this and we have to do this, and so we get all caught up. And really, if everybody in this world dropped back into what Sherman is conveying now, this big energy of opening like a flower, we would have this age of love completely fulfilled.
Hmm.
This evolution that we're moving into, that many of us are feeling and expressing as best as we can in this world, and moving more and more into, we would simply flow with each other in such a way that all the problems of the world that people consider problems at this time would literally dissolve.
Yes, Jesse just enjoys kissing the phone, purring loudly, walked in as soon as you mentioned Sherman. And at the same time, he too was sending me a message that everything is light, that we are light, that it's very simple, and just to allow this light to be. So I am really delighted with these two very, very special, loving, wise beings.
Yeah, he said he laughed. He was laughing when he came in. He says, "Oh, it's Sherman." And they're part of each other, of course. We're all part of each other. But, you know, they're consciously soul essence partners, you know, in consciousness, just like you are and I am. And anybody who has any consciousness of it can feel that. And so he says, "Well, I hold this little sort of dark form that sits on the earth." And Sherman emanates the energy now that he's in complete spirit form, like a big dome, and I hold it down here and ground it. And he says, and that's what we do when we're in bodies, is we ground the energy from the heavens.
Yes, each time you said the heavens or described Sherman up there, Jesse was looking up.
They feel each other, and Sherman is everywhere. You know, he's such a scamp, too. You know, he'll appear and... one of my friends regards him as her guru and calls on him, you know, and sometimes she loses things and she says, "Well, Sherman, I lost this. Where is it?" And Sherman will come in and say, "It's right there. Now look in the bottom of your purse." And she says, "Sherman, I looked there already. Just look now. You just didn't see it before." And there she finds it. So he's there on this, on these, you know, helper levels on the very day-to-day things of life. And then there's this great just holding the space. So what else is there for any of us? You know, I just want to tell people, what else is there when you're in this space? You just flow. You go to the market. You take your nap. You do your work, whatever it is that you enjoy and where your flow goes. You do whatever is right. You don't necessarily, you know, run and take charge of things here, there, and everywhere and scatter your energies all over the place because that's what thinking says or somebody else says you should do. You just flow in this way. Action flows out of you. So, you know, you get this argument that, well, okay, you can talk about meditation, you can talk about being in love, but what about the real world? What about social action? I said, you know what? Social action flows out of you as is right, as is out of this place. It flows out of you. You naturally help the poor. You naturally donate to this and that. You naturally go and help your neighbor. You know, you may not run to every disaster around the world because that would be dysfunctional. It wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't be able to do it, and you wouldn't be effective. But you don't do what other people think you should do, but you naturally assist other beings in this dimension.
Yes, and who needs to be assisted by you seems to show up. I'm just remembering a couple of days ago when a turkey walked down the driveway and you know, came to have a consultation with Jesse.
Yeah.
And then left. I have no idea where that beautiful turkey came from.
Yeah, and they appear and disappear. I mean,
yes.
Who shows up? You know, here
yeah.
you're feeling vulnerable. Your body's hurting. You know, you go, "Oh God, I wish somebody would help me now. You know, I need help on a very physical human level." And somebody comes, and they're the angel of compassion.
It's so true. You know, I found the more focused I am, and just going very deep with my own currents, the people and the animals that show up, that come here and contribute, come in such a way of emptiness. Not empty like anything's lacking, just like ease, flow.
Openness, yeah.
Openness. Openness,
yeah.
Nothing more is needed. It just feels so right. There's,
yeah.
It feels so clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even people we might judge as less evolved when we're in our thinking place, there they are. They're sweet angels of mercy. They're sweet, loving beings. If we're walking in that open space, we find, oh, there they are in their sweetness. It actually brings their sweetness forward, and that's why, like Peace Pilgrim and many other people, St. Francis and you name it, all of us, when we're in this space, we draw out the goodness that we are.
Yeah.
That's in everybody. And
yes.
the murderer, the person, the rapist, whoever, they just were raised that way. They're in a place on their path where they need some other kind of, maybe need some other kind of direction. We don't know. But if we just stay in the place we're meant to be on our path, and we cross paths with them, and we're meant to have this interaction, they go, oh, I remember. Oh, this is where now I can be some other way. But I thought there was only one way to be because they were in their thinking, human socialized thinking, that the only way you can live is but with murdering people.
Well, that's just a beautiful way to know life, because you're reminding everyone who's listening to this, and you're reminding me that conditioning is really nothing more than conditioning. You know, it's something got taught, it got taught again, it got taught again, and then in the environment of somebody else's love and another a way of being or doing, someone can just remember that there
yeah.
is, can discover.
It can all change.
Yes, yes.
And that's why a lot of us, you know, require some kind of disaster, because it kind of shakes us out of conditioning, out of all that thinking, and we go, oh, you know, here we are vulnerable, and we go, oh, what is there? Well, what else, what is there but to take care of each other?
Yeah.
No. What can we do? What would we do? How else would we live? We don't even have to think about it anymore, because that shake up, that cataclysm, kind of knocks it out of us.
Yes, yes. In a way, it's a very compassionate move, these disasters that come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They can be, you know,
yeah.
they can be, and they can shake people out of, well, what's real? What's really real? I know before the harmonic convergence in 1987, I used to get about a yearly shakeup where God, the divine within me, would kind of take away everything, and I would be left with, well, I have nothing. I have no thinking. I have no, you know, I don't even know what to do. Well, there isn't anything to do. But what was always left,
yeah.
the bottom line was kindness.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what can I, how can I act? Well, after everything was removed and I was thoroughly scoured out, what was left at the bottom was kindness. So it would begin to flow from me, a kind act to myself, to other people, whatever. And then once the harmonic convergence came, there was a radical shift in how these transformations happened. They became happening more quickly, more radically, people bumping up in their awareness much quicker. And now we're in, you know, Transformation City every microsecond.
Yeah.
So that these, as you said in the beginning, these states of love, this state of sweetness is available to us. And we're, in a way, we're scoured every moment and asked to let go of what's not essential. Don't cling to it, because really it's all going to be whipped around and the essential is going to be left. And we're going to be, we're continually made into new beings, but there's something coming. And, you know, I've seen the stages so far, but I don't know what's coming next. You know, I have ideas about it. But I go, you know, it can only get better. Even among, I sort of relish the transformations, even though people regard them as disasters, because I go, well, look what's happening. People are being reborn.
Yeah, and like you said, there's something natural. There's a wave of something natural, used to kindness, and it could be any quality. It could be care. It could be compassion. It could be honoring, it could be respect, it could be love, it could be, but there's these natural undercurrents that are really happy to move through us.
Yeah.
And when something gets our attention about, hey, what's really essential here? Well, what's really essential here is some quality like love or kindness. It's not very willful. It just, it, with like meaning the human will, it's not so much a decision. It's more of a it is a choice, but it's not a thought-out decision. It's just that in the moment that we're aware of what's essential, these waves keep moving through us, a wave of caring, a wave of reaching out to someone, a wave of happiness, a wave of sometimes I'm interacting with people that are feeling that they're very befuddled by things or everything's very painful and I'm finding myself in joy. I'm not in joy that they're having that experience. I might be having a compassion that they're having that experience, but I'm having a joy, and I'm finding that when I'm allowing that to be the case, because that's really what's happening, when I'm allowing what's happening to be recognized by my individual self tenderly, that, like you said, other beings around start to catch it. It's like a happy virus. It's the opposite of a virus.
Yeah. I got to tell you an experience, Laura, that keeps coming up. I have been a very, on my teaching nature, I'm very outgoing and I'm very laughing and I'm out there. I spend really most of my life in quiet. And I go back and I spend the time in quiet and in the depths. And then I have to, you know, express it all and talk like mad and when I'm with people talking away. But I find that, you know, I'm here, when I'm at home, I'm really quiet. And I wave at the neighbors, you know, people walk their dogs going by. We have a really nice community of people. Well, I did a yard sale. I've never done a yard sale in my life. And a friend, a neighbor of mine, wanted to do a yard sale. I said, well, let's do it together. I have some things, too. And, you know, I used to give them to the local thrift shop, which I really love because they donate to the animals and all that. And I said, well, let's do a real clean out. So we did this yard sale, and the neighbors and lots of people from various areas came. And it was so wonderful. I just listened to these beings. You know, they didn't know, in quotes, who I was, you know, and my fame and all that stuff. So there was just me as a person,
yes,
which is very nice.
Yes.
And so they came and they're telling me their stories and they're, you know, just talking. And this one man started talking about his dog and, you know, I was listening. And then I thought, you know, I'm going to go into an even deeper listening. I mean, it wasn't like I was thinking that in detail. I was just conscious that I could listen to him even deeper.
Yes.
And I said listening deeper, and I went, oh, my gosh. I was just experiencing this very, you know, humble, sweet being talking about his experience. And I just had a flash of how delicious this was. It was like orgasmic. You know, it was like, whoa, what could be better than sitting here in my yard sale listening to
this
man?
Yes, I get that. I get that.
I get that even when people are talking about tragedies or, oh, they're so confused. I go, you know, what could be more joyous? When you talked about your joy, I just thought, it's so delicious. I'm completely experiencing this other being and their reality.
Yes.
Their experience.
Yes.
I go, what a trip. I'm going to do yard sales all the time. I mean, you know, this was a vehicle. I said, I even started laughing, and the neighbors were coming. I said, thank you for coming to visit me. I said, this is so incredible. You're just walking right in and visiting me.
I love it.
You know?
Yeah. I have a similar situation, which is when I'm out teaching, it's more my extroverted part of me, and I tell stories, and I'm laughing, and I'm crying, and I'm interacting, and then I spend lots of time just very, very quiet in nature here at home. And in that quiet, everything goes deeper and deeper and deeper into this state of almost like the being is occurring, and the witness is witnessing everything. And then I go out and I get to go to the airport. And the universe, I love who the universe assigns me for my airport seat companions. It's always wonderful. It will be like one time I was flying into Mexico to teach communication with the animals. And the one next to me was flying in to go hunting. And I don't know what I was doing, but someone was with me who had just like a really different political point of view.
Yeah.
And another time it was someone who had like an extremely different religious point of view. And I'll get into conversations with these people. I'll absolutely love them.
Yeah.
And they'll tell me all about their lives. And I usually don't tell them much about mine because I don't feel any. It's like very small. Who I think I am, my life, my identity. I could tell them. It could
potentially. But it's more fun to find out about what their view of everything is. I mean, I find like, well, I already know all about myself. Why do I want to talk about it? You know, I'd rather find out about this being and how they view life, and I just end up feeling like, wow.
Yeah.
Even, as you said, when it's very different.
Very
or
different.
Or they're hunters or they're, you know, have a different orientation. I end up feeling, what a tender person. What a genuine person.
Yes, yes, I can relate to that so much. And it feels so good to just be in this space of an invitation to others and an opening, and sometimes not sharing any details about my smaller identity as a mind, as a body, allows a great openness. So they get to be whoever they are, and it's fine with me. It's absolutely fine with me. And maybe if I, sometimes I think, when I'm teaching, I do share a lot of that. But some occasions and environments, I'm thinking, if I share that, it's almost like going to cause a ground for Otto, you know, worry. Like if I tell the hunter, it's not a right or wrong. It's just this feeling I have. I'm just going to be the space of openness here. And
I feel there, you know, it's like there's a time to talk and there's a time to listen. I mean, it just comes down to, I learn so much because I learn more about openness. You know, I learn about, it's like all this time I spend alone and I feel myself growing. I feel, you know, the divine working in me, working me over, and coming to another space and just watching the next space open up. Well, my proving ground is being among people. So I go among people to the airport or, you know, to teaching, and I get to observe where I'm really at, how I've really grown.
Yeah.
And when I really listen to people, the love gets to grow
with
people. You know, instead of just being alone and feeling it grow, when I'm with people, which is, you know, the greatest test, and it's becoming not even a test like it used to be, because before I used to get headaches and I'd feel resistance to people, I'd feel afraid of people, and I'd feel all these things like, oh, I got to adjust to this, I got to adjust to that. And now it's more like, oh, I get to walk among people and feel them. And that's again another whole new experience for me, another level of the experience, because again you keep experiencing the same experience your whole life, but another level of it, another way of being. And this is what we're being given in this age. This is what I want people to taste in the fruit of our you know, the evolution of this age, the work we've done, and those of us who have been, you know, conscious of it, of doing this work of ditch digging. You know, people ask me, how come you're so full of joy? I say, I'm good with a shovel. You know, I've done my ditch digging. I've done a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I said, and, you know, when you've done all that ditch digging and loved what's at the bottom of the ditch and really relished it, then you come up and you go, oh, and things change. And really that's all there is left in life, is to experience that there really isn't anything left to do. There's nothing left to accomplish. It's just I walk around, I do what feels right to me, what feels good, and people keep saying these wonderful things that I'm doing.
I'm happy
well,
to hear
I don't
that.
Think I'm really doing any of that. I really think that it's just what's being called for at this time, called out of people, called out of me, called out of them, and we're all doing it together. Otherwise, how could they experience it?
Yes, I have this delightful experience on Fridays because a couple of staff people who work with the Love Climate come over, and there's when they come, I just start to watch at times how we'll get into certain roles for a moment, like all of a sudden because I'm in the role of teacher, I'll see, oh, someone's seeing things in this certain way. But I can flip my eyes in a minute, and I'll think, well, what if you're the teacher? Because really that's the truth. We're all the teacher. And I'll see, oh, wow, that's very interesting. My mind's creating really different patterns than when I thought I was a teacher. But what happens as the day goes on and the waves get deeper, because they just seem to when we're together, is I start to notice more and more of where, in tiny little ways, I jump into the illusion or I resist what's in the ditch.
Yeah.
Because they're all, because there's three beings focused in a similar way.
Yeah.
And then I love it. And then I just start to watch all the different things flowing out of the three different beings.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun. I sometimes I'm teaching, you know, and I'm in the flow and I'm just doing my thing. And then suddenly I catch myself in an old pattern where I have to prove something.
Yes.
And I go, oh, there it is. There's that pattern of me trying to prove something. So I laugh and I say, look at that. You know, and I find that, you know, in earlier times I couldn't admit, I wouldn't be able to have admitted that I was doing that because then I wouldn't be perfect and I wouldn't be the perfect example teacher. You know, so now I just go, oh, look at what I just did. You know, there was a blowhard in me, you know, and I'm just going to love that.
Yes.
Blowhard, because I could judge it and say that was really bad, that wasn't the perfect teacher or whatever, but look how funny that is.
Yes, I love that. Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
And isn't it funny how I felt I had the need to prove something? Well, it wasn't me, really me. It was just a pattern.
Yeah.
And now that the pattern has been exhumed, it's come up and I witnessed it, and now we've all witnessed it. We can just kind of laugh.
We can laugh together. And I found that in those environments where I have, you know, the role of teacher, but it's really like the birds, when the birds take turns being the leader, and they've explained to me how the one who's leading is really just being extremely so sensitive to the ones who are following, without even looking visually, feeling them so much, that really the leader's kind of following where the group needs to go, and then gently, artistically, flowing with it there. And I've heard so many times from people that when I'm laughing at myself and the silly things that I do, and, you know, I can do any of it. I can be mean. I can be passive aggressive. I can be crazy. That it's really happy for them to hear someone say, oh, look what I did. Whoops, sorry.
It's a big relief because then they don't have to try to hide it and detest it in themselves.
Yes.
We all have it. And, you know, I go to people, okay, so I'm in quotes leading right here. You've assigned me as the leader, as the teacher. I also have a lot of experience, and I love sharing it, and I really, if I couldn't share it, I would die right here on the spot, you know, because it would just boil up in me, and I thank you. I always say thank you so much for coming, because otherwise I would, like, explode if I couldn't share with you. And then I go, really, you know, this isn't any big deal being this teacher, or, you know, people put you up somewhere, and I go, really, it's the greatest servant. I am kissing your feet. I am down here kissing your feet, and I literally do. I go down and I say, thank you so much, all of you, for coming, because you just saved my life.
Yeah, I can relate.
You just all saved my life.
Yeah.
If I could not give you this, if I could not express this, if you did not come here and listen to me, I could not live.
Yeah.
And so I am completely indebted to you. I thank you so much. So we all kind of fall into lusciousness with each other, into complete gratitude. Thank you for being, in quote, student, teacher, whoever you are. Thank you, everybody, for sharing whatever was right for you. Like, it was right for you to come to this course and pay me this money, and for me to talk to you, and for you to listen to me, and for us to go round and round in this, and for me to listen to you, and you to listen to me. And wasn't it luscious, and what fun we had. And, you know, then all analysis is dropped, and all roles disappear, and we're all just kind of rolling around on the floor in the ocean.
I love it. And
enjoying
we're all
the
just,
swim together.
Yeah, and we're all just expressing in whatever way our being
Yeah.
It's created to express, and it's happy expressing. And
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly, because a lot of people would not like doing what I do, and they wouldn't enjoy it. It's not their flow. I said, do what is your flow. I mean, I admire everybody. I have these people coming to do different work on my house, and I can see they're amazed when I thank them so much. I say, thank you for your good service. Thank you for your giving me this skill, your carpentry. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it so much. And they just look at me and like, whoa. And I go, well, why would I not be appreciative? of these people helping me with their natural flow and their experience. Like I give my experience, they give their experience. But I, you know, give me a hammer and, you know, I won't do the same thing they did.
Right. Yeah. I'm so happy to find you just loving and enjoying and feeling so much gratitude for all the beings you encounter and having so much fun.
Well, they're wonderful. You know,
yes.
I have such good experience. I tell people, you know, people will come and say, well, I had this bad experience here. I had this bad experience with this person. And I just find I don't have that. I have people all the time who come and who even often offer that I not pay them. You know, they say, oh, well, I'll just do it. No, don't pay me. I go, well, I have to pay you. It's your work. And so, well, let me just do this for you. And I go, whoa. You know, and I just go, I'm so grateful for this. And when I get into another flow, when I get into flow of, oh, I feel a little tight or I feel a little short or whatever, then I get another energy coming toward me.
Yes, yes.
And you know, then I go, oh, I see. I was being a little tight. I think I'll shift into being more abundant.
Yes.
And just give them more than they asked for, and then I'll be out of this feeling of tightness and more in the openness, and they'll be able to give more to their family and
yes.
et cetera.
Yes.
So that's why I think, you know, with everybody, when they come to me with all the woes of the world and, oh, I can't do anything about this and I can't do, I said, you can do everything and nothing.
Mm.
You know, we're all doing everything and nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not going to run out there and get my body cut up or blown up or whatever, trying to save this and that. There's no point. I didn't come here to do that. But I will do what is right for me to do, and you can do that too. And is it really right for you to jump on a plane and go there and, in quotes, save the dolphins or whatever? You know, I mean, is it? Why don't you, you know, get in touch with them and feel what they feel and just unite with them? You know, they, of course, know much more than we do, but
yeah.
anyway, that's
yeah.
the whole point. But I just go, there isn't anything to resist. There isn't anything to do. We just flow and love. And in our human selves, what can we do?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, be real. I say to people, be real. You can only do so much, you know, on a human level, on a this dimensional reality level. You can only do so much, so do it well.
And everything is so right here. I feel that so much, that everyone is here. Every situation is here. It really is, in a very deep place.
Yeah.
Everyone you are in contact with, or not even knowing you're in contact with, is here right now. It's tangible. I can feel it. I can see it. There's only one universe. There's only one.
and I feel that's kind of a joy of being a teacher too, because all these people that I meet, I always feel united with them.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, because I've met them personally with their bodies right there, I said, we're never apart now. I mean,
there's a deep love. It's just forever. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're never apart. I always feel you. You
yes.
know, I'm not a real social person. I don't go to social events. But I tell you, I feel like I have a society of beings all the time. I feel the deepest connection. There's no apartness. And when they come, it's as if they never come again and visit. I feel like they never left and they never will leave.
I feel that from you, and I relate to that very strongly. I know sometimes I need to call someone, actually frequently, I need to call someone or write to them by need. It's just my nature. I just wake up and, oh, that person, I'm writing to them today.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was 5 minutes ago. I just happen to know now. And lots of times people would say, what? How did you know? How did you know I was thinking of you? How did you know I was asking you this question?
Yeah.
But of course I knew, because there was no distance between us. There was, they are here. Yes.
And really, just as you said, all the world's events are happening right here. You know,
yes.
I naturally just keep in touch with what's going on. I don't feel pulled down by it. I don't feel like, oh, God, this is terrible. I don't focus on all the details of everybody's lives or the gossip or whatever. But I try to just keep, you know, what's happening on our planet. It's kind of, I mean, it's an exciting age. There's all kinds of things happening. And whatever is happening, whatever war it is, whatever disaster, whatever great, wonderful, you know, accomplishment has happened, I just go, I just love it all.
Mm.
I just am excited about it. I just love it. And again, sometimes people get into this sadness, get into this fear, like it's so bad. They can't relate to being in joy about everything. And I just go, well, I can't tell you that, you know, joy is a state. It's not an emotion. So I can feel emotions. I can feel sad that people were hurt. You know, and I do. You know, and I can feel, oh, God, that's so hard. That's such a hard experience, et cetera, et cetera. But the states, and they're different than emotions, and I tell people, states of joy, peace, love, harmony, these are the flow of the ocean that we live in, that we all can tap into, that we're all part of. And if we just go into these states, if we just feel these states, we just live in these states, everything else is okay.
These states are very available to us because they're inside us. And as we let ourselves surrender into these states, they are just what's happening. They are the waves coming from everything. And,
look at all the masters, Lori.
Yeah.
You know, look at the, you know, and this is what I tell people, look at all the masters. You know, it's been a thread through everything, even when people forget so much of who they are. The thread is simplicity, openness to what is.
Yes.
Kindness, reaching out. Think of the saints.
Yes.
Think of the masters. Think of Jesse, Justin, Joy.
Yes.
Think of Sherman.
Yes.
Think of all our animal friends at home. Think of the plants. Think of the trees.
Yes.
You know, think of all these beings. What is it that they're holding? Life is. It pulses.
Yeah.
It's full.
Yeah.
It's rich. It's
yeah.
deep. And sometimes we can't feel that. Like I wake up in pain, you know, if I arthritic pain or something, I go, oh, God, this is really bad. Now, okay, so I feel the pain. I don't deny it. It kind of puts a big crunch on life at that moment. And then I look around and I go, you know, life is still the same.
Mm.
It's all there.
Yeah.
It's still pulsing. It's beautiful love. The trees are still inviting me to be
yes.
in the love.
Yes.
My house is inviting me.
Yes.
My computer is inviting me.
Yes.
Life is inviting me to be in love. Whatever
yes.
else I am experiencing in my physical body.
Yes, and it's in those moments I find if my physical body or my emotional body is going into those kind of states of fear or pain or contraction, which are real in a certain way.
Yeah.
They are real. They have their place in reality. And when I just notice what is happening here in these deeper places of love at the same time, I found many times those waves of whatever fear or pain is having an expression take on a very different way of being noticed in my existence. My experience of them quickly changes as I become back in touch with all the waves of
everything. Yeah, it's there is a dissolving, and I find I go to another state of evolution in relationship to pain or fear or whatever it is. I go into another state. Lori, I have to say that it is so much fun talking with you.
Right, Clay.
This
yeah.
is just so much fun. I feel like I'm just in a big wow of, isn't this just great?
I'm so glad because this thing about interview, it's such a funny word for me, and I was really saying the word interview, and I was calling forth was, let's have a conversation.
Exactly.
That's an interview. That
is so much fun. It's so fun. And I feel our companions, you know, our cat companions and all our companions of all aspects of life just going, ah.
Yes. I wanted to share about from what you just said, when I was really sick for a few years, which was a new experience for me to get so sick.
Yeah.
And I really loved it. I would really like to stay healthy from now on. Has always been my intention. However, I had been speaking to insects quite a lot before it happened, and I feel the synchronicity was very set up now. So when my body got very ill, I was spending a lot of time intricately being present in different cells, organs. That was all I knew to do. I was being so minutely present in these sensations. And it was taking me into such a state of presence and acceptance, in the way you speak of acceptance, of the different aspects and expressions that we create, that we surrender to, that we feel. That, and it was teaching me and informing me to do that when I came out of the disharmony of being sickness, more and more back into the harmony of wellness. But it was a great teacher. It made me contract into the smallest places within my physical nature and really pull my spirit into my physical nature. So I saw it as a great tactful gift that the universe had orchestrated to give this teaching of presence and of bringing this feeling of this big spirit into this physical, biological life form.
Yeah.
I felt, until that time, I always felt I was too. I was given a physical being, and I felt I'm a soul, but here I am. I've married a physical being for my incarnation, and we need to collaborate. And I'm happy with the physical being. It's flexible. It laughs. You know,
yeah.
It's a good one for me. It cries. It's expressive. I like that. But there was always this feeling like more like two, and so the being sick was really a divinely compassionate act of love. I wouldn't have consciously chosen it in a thinking mode, but
you know,
it came.
When you're talking about getting in touch and being present with yourself, and I've had the experience of communicating, just like you communicate with animals, with plants, with the earth, with everything, when you communicate with your body, the body and the sounds, they are so sweet. They're just working away, trying to keep everything together. They're a big, unified, they're individual beings, and they're working with each other, and they're flowing with each other, and they're trying so hard to keep everything going properly.
Yes.
Despite
their job.
A lot of wild things happening to them and impinging on them.
Yes. And it's you know, it's like you're saying, it's just a fun. One thing I loved about meeting Gina Palmer, who actually I met her because someone told me to call you years and years ago before I knew you. You didn't take private clients anymore at that time, or you were full, and you told me to call Gina. And so I learned so much from Gina. But the most important thing I learned from Gina was just how playful and fun life is. And really, to laugh at things that I would take very seriously. And I grew up in Washington, D.C., so, you know, I had in my mind certain things were very serious.
Yes.
And Gina would just laugh at them.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm so happy about that.
That's great.
I feel that same quality with you of, you know, just seeing the simplicity and playfulness of things and not like, making them into a bigger importance than they are. They just are what they are, and there's so much playfulness and fun in them, and every being, every cell is doing its job in the best way it knows how.
I laugh because it gives me this example, reminds me of this example of my former husband. He was my manager, and he used to be with me when I give lectures, and he said, Penelope, do you just realize you were laughing about death to this whole audience? You said, oh, and he died, and you started laughing, you know. And he said, do you realize you were laughing? And I said, well, it just came through, and obviously everybody got it, you know, because he's going, this is a bit of a contradiction. And I go, well, did you see the people? Did you watch the people? They started to get it.
Yes.
The flow is all pretty humorous.
Yes, it's very humorous.
And the goings,
yes,
and the bodies, and the this is and the that is. I said, did you see anybody get up and leave or punch me or anything? No, they didn't, because it just was part of the flow to laugh. It just burst out.
I understand so well. When my mother died, I was laughing. I loved my mother, and she was a spirit of a lot of love. And we had a complex relationship, but I loved her deeply. When she died, I went through great, huge grief. It was very sad for me, but I also went through elation and laughter, and a lot of people came to her house. I was shocked to find out how many people loved my mother. I had no idea. There were just people and people and people coming there, and some of them found me laughing hysterically. And some of them were really inspired by that, and some of them were quite upset and thought, you know, I had a psychological problem.
Well, they thought you were pretty much of a lunatic, you know.
It was fine. And my mother was there without her body, and she laughed with me, so, yeah. Yeah.
This is so funny, because one of my students said to me, Penelope, you know, I don't know how I'm going to go out and be an animal communicator and just tell people what I truly believe. And she said to me, it's all very well for you to just express everything. You're a lovable lunatic. And I laughed and laughed. I said, that is so, so amazing. I'll never forget that. Lovable lunatic. Of course, Luna is the moon. That's the mother. I said, wow, what a compliment. A lovable lunatic.
Yes.
But, you know, sometimes that's what it turns out like.
Yeah.
You know, like divine comedy.
It is. It's very funny.
Well, it's all pretty funny when you get into it.
Most
when
of what happens.
When you start feeling it all, it's all just rolls like that.
I'm with you on that. It's
and you can cry
funny
about it all, too.
Yes.
And then once you've cried about it all, then you can laugh about it all.
One of the most eye-opening experiences I had was years and years ago. I was working at the day treatment. I had just finished school, I was in school. That was my internship, and I was very naive about what day treatment was. I had come out to California, kind of immersed myself in this alternative culture for a while, went back to the East Coast, and I was very misinformed, and I thought day treatment was a place where people who wanted to do personal growth work signed up. And so day treatment, you know, I got there my first day, and was so excited about all these people that wanted to be in personal growth work and were taking some weeks off from work to immerse themselves. And the first person who shared, and I was used to, you know, California people sitting in a circle and sharing, shared that she was feeling homicidal and was planning to kill her daughter. So I was very shocked. You know, I had never heard anything like this before. I'd never met anyone who said anything like that.
Yeah.
So it became a very deep heart-opening process for me to spend a year with this group of people who were very troubled, you know, very, very troubled beyond any trouble I was used to.
Yeah.
And my task was to be there in service and devotion and love. And I really gave it everything I had. I gave whatever I could. And I remember near the end, this woman who I adored said to the whole group, Lori, you have no idea what it's like to lose your mind and go insane, but you do. You can't change us, but you've made me laugh, and I'll never forget you. And it really was very important for me to hear that, because I was hearing, yeah, you know what? Nobody changed. Everyone was doing their thing, but they laughed. They laughed. They laughed as they were doing what they needed to do. I know some of my colleagues might find this atrocious, and, you know, we're supposed to keep little scores on people, and they changed, and, you know, but I'm thinking in a very different way, like you, and it was a beautiful thing for her to say. What I heard in it was, my mind's working in a way that I would prefer it not be working, and, you know, maybe some kind of herb or could have changed that. Maybe some salt could change that. Maybe some environment could change that. But that's not what was happening. She was having an experience, this incarnation of her mind doing things. She knew it was doing them. I've seen this in my sister, too. My sister's brilliant, and her IQ is, in the term that's not politically correct now, but in as we were growing up, she was called mentally retarded. So it was really amazing to grow up with her because I could tell how brilliant she was. But her mind couldn't do things and her body couldn't do things that we perceive to be normal or necessary.
Yeah.
And it really showed me how perfect everything is and the difference between our soul brilliance and what our machinery is doing temporarily.
Yeah. The connections.
Yeah.
And then it just comes down to wherever you're meant to be, if you can, as you said, just be present to whoever's there and whatever's there.
Yeah.
And the experience is rich, and you don't have to judge it. You don't just say, well, that was a good experience, or that was a better experience, or that was the right kind of experience, or I helped these people. You just go, you know what? I'm just here. And I feel the humility then comes in. You know, you just drop out of identities and what's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And you just go, I'm just here, and I'm just another person. I'm just another wave.
And that's so loving. And we interacted. Here we are. We're all here. We're each a wave.
Yeah.
We're in this group and at this time, and we're each being ourselves, and we're each being affected and moved together and by one another. And we don't really know how that's supposed to be or turn out. Yeah. Well, I'm very happy that we had this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels very good. It feels very juicy, delicious, and loving. And I feel very honored. I feel like I've been given a great gift. It's like a real sort of a vitamin for me, you know.
yes.
To have this exchange with you, this delicious conversation. I say delicious because I can taste it.
Mm.
You know, I can really taste it. I feel like I've been nourished.
Yes.
And I've, been able to have more clarity and in expressing and in feeling your understanding and in listening to you and Sherman and Jesse Justin Joy and all beings. As I'm sitting here, and I have in my cabin, my office is in the loft, so I'm up in the trees, and I'm in the trees, and I'm watching these birds while we're talking. These birds are soaring around, just in great harmony, like you talked about being the leader of the birds and being sensitive to the others. They're doing that, and they're ravens. And the clouds and everything, and the trees pulsing, and it's just really perfect.
Yes, and I've been hearing a bird sing quite a lot outside the window as we had our conversation.
Yeah,
and feeling the sun has been, there's a window on the roof and the sun's coming in, and I feel very uplifted and very grounded into that upliftment from just the chemistry of our conversation.
Yeah, and I just feel that blessing coming in. May all beings, it's a Buddhist blessing, I think, may all beings be happy.
Yes.
And may all beings feel the joy of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
May all beings share in love and caring and kindness for each other, because what else is there? What else can we give each other but presence and sharing?
Yes, and I'm very delighted that we'll be sharing this call with people so that they can feel this and receive whatever they attract themselves to this to receive and give.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yay.
Yay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, well, take care, and I hope to talk to you again.
Okay, Lori. Bye-bye
now. Okay, bye-bye.